This is Phil Farron. I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week. Got a lot of things accomplished. Puttering along on projects. Oh. Sorry, I haven't had anything to eat before this podcast because I was running around. I had breakfast with a friend this morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, which is halfway into town. And then I knew this evening I was going to run by church and help set up the video. And there's no point in me running all the way home and running back. So I actually, for the first time in a while, probably for a month, actually went in to work at my major clients. So we got that done today. And then I've just been back to the church, got the video set up. And now I'm heading home. So haven't had a chance to get a bite to eat yet, but we'll get that done when I get home. So it will be fine. So all is well with work. We were able to get done what we needed to get done this week. We'll have more things to do next week, but that's all puttering along. I'm about to sneeze. I am told that sneezing is not a sign of COVID, which I didn't really think it was, but let's see. Oh, speaking of COVID, my wife was having an episode with some back pain and all that kind of stuff last week. I might have mentioned that. And I was looking up on all the quarantine stuff to try to figure out, okay, so how many days do I have to be in, and what am I going to do with costumes? And I had told everybody on Friday, I said, okay, something's going on with my wife. So, you know, just not everybody, but people I thought I needed to. Something's going on with my wife. I'm not real sure. So I have one gal, whenever she sees me at Walmart, she runs over and gives me a hug. So and it's, we're both wearing masks and it's 2 seconds, you know. So I told her, can't do it this week, can't do it. My wife's got something. I don't know what's going on. She said, okay, okay. So, but anyways, so my wife did finally go in for a test on Friday. We got the results back on Sunday. She was negative. Yay. So that's not what it was. It was something else. But at least I am not quarantined. So, yay. So that's good. Writing is good. We're puttering along. I'm a little behind this week. Sunday was just one of those days that just got away from me. And by the time there was just, you know, a few things that needed to be done here and there. And by the time I actually settled in for writing, it was 5 o'clock. And that's way too late to get 3,000 words in. So I think I got 1,000 words in. And I've been playing catch up ever since, scrambling, trying to, you know, make up the deficit, hoping to get ahead another 500 words tonight, which will put me only 1,000 words down. Oh, excuse me. And that's very doable. So if I have a good solid weekend, I'll get into my 10,000 words. I'll be good. Rubber Ducky Day was very fun. It was very fun. A lot of people enjoyed Rubber Ducky Day, so that was lots and lots of fun. Tomorrow was Polka Dot Day, which I have already done. I did that last year, so I just pulled out the costumes. Costume tried it on last night. All the pieces are there. We're good. I'm still working on Backwards Day. And it's coming together. It's coming together. It will be very, very interesting to see if that's how this all comes together. A lot of little details yet, and Backwards Day is a week from tomorrow, so yeah. So I need a good weekend of writing, and I need a good weekend of getting squared away on the costume, so we'll see. It's going to be a busy weekend. But Jesus knows about all these things, and we'll be good. We'll be good. So, that's good. Let's see. Family is good. All is well. My wife is still struggling a little bit. We think maybe She had a fibro flare, a fibromyalgia flare. She's been sort of struggling in the last few years with some fibromyalgia, and it has been something that has been present but not necessarily debilitating. But there were some stressors in her life over the last couple of weeks, and so she thinks maybe that's what it was. It took a lot out of her. So she is getting better, but she's still struggling a little bit. So step at a time. What else? I think that's about it. I do have notes, but as usual, it's getting dark. I think I can remember my notes enough to get across the general idea of what I want to talk about today. I watched a clip from a podcast. I have mentioned them before. Brent Weinstein and Heather Haying. Very interesting. Both consider themselves liberals. Both were caught in an uproar at a very liberal Evergreen University at Evergreen University out in Washington, D.C. Got caught up in an uproar because he dared to challenge the orthodoxy, simply asking for people to consider what they were doing, not necessarily to stop it, but simply to consider it. And on the basis of that, there was an uproar, and they were ostracized, and, you know, their resignations were demanded for, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, having dared to challenge the oligarchy or autocracy or whatever you want to call it, you know, they had that frontline experience very early on in this whole woke extremism. And so they have an interesting perspective, but they're both evolutionary biologists, very level-headed, and they're not afraid to bring up topics that others would not talk about because of the potential consequences. You know, they've been through that, and now they have their own podcast and are building their viewership. Last time I checked, I think they're up to 45,000 viewers or subscribers or so, but it's a lot of interesting stuff. And it's fun to watch their dynamic, the husband and wife dynamic. So this is really just a clip that I was watching that I thought, well, there you go. A little background before I talk about what they talked about. And that is that I grew up in the Philippines. I cherish my time in the Philippines. It was lovely. Lovely people, beautiful country, really a wonderful, wonderful way to grow up, to see how other people around the world live. And it's fascinating to me because there were fairly stark cultural differences between the Philippines and the United States. And those stark cultural differences, I think, can be traced to one core thing. I can give you lots of examples of the stark cultural differences. We had a missionary named Wayne Schoenfeld, and I think it's just happened to Wayne Schoenfeld. When he got there to the Philippines, he was told by the other missionaries, now, there may be situations where a policeman's going to pull you over for no apparent reason, and the policeman's just looking for a handout. You know, if you just give him 20 pesos, then everything will be fine. And Wayne Schoenfeld said, well, I'm not going to do that. That's bribery. You know, I'm just not going to do it. So, sure enough, you know, several weeks goes by, he gets pulled over. And the policeman takes his license, and the policeman isn't going to ask for a bribe, but he's kind of waiting around. Wayne Schoenfeld doesn't do anything. And so he takes his driver's license and he says, well, you can come down to the police station and get it from there. So he goes down to the police station. He says, I'm here to pick up my license. And the guy says, oh, yeah, okay. If you could just wait, you know, we'll see about that. So he waits there all day. Nothing happens. Oh, yeah, yeah, we're working on that. Yeah, you can just wait some more. Goes down the next day. Starts waiting for hours. Nothing's happening. Finally, he decides, well, this is silly. So he walks up to the desk, front desk there, and he says, I have 20 pesos here. I'm looking for my license. And the guy goes, oh, look, your license is right here. And gives him his license. And then Wayne Chaney fell, you know, goes home. Common occurrence in the Philippines. Common. We had a bookkeeper at the Bible College. You know, really fine, seemingly fine, upstanding, no problem, good Christian, was embezzling money. You know, and acted like nothing was wrong in the world until Dad brought her in and sat her down and said, you know, I'm looking at this, what's going on here? What's happening here? And, you know, oh, nothing, what? And finally, you know, he made an accusation and then she broke down and started to cry. Well, why did you do this? Well, you know, you had so much and I had so little. I'm so sorry. You know, life goes on. I'm getting my mail. Let me tell you one more story. So Dad needed a new guitar, and so he goes down to the guitar store, and he, you know, it's, oh, I've dropped a bunch of stuff. He goes down to the guitar store, and he's looking at some guitars, and he's got a guitar there that he's looking at, and, you know, he's figuring out what's going on. Oh, first art source, Howie. What in the world? Oh, okay. No. That's for Amber. Okay. It was from, like, Kentucky, and I thought that was where it was being delivered to, and I said, how in the world did Kentucky get here? But, so, anyways, he's playing this guitar, and it's a pretty good guitar, and he looks at the guitar, and it's, I think it said Gibson or something like that, and so my dad said, oh, so, this is a Gibson, and the guy said, oh, you like Gibsons? Because, you know, if you don't like Gibson, we can put any name you want on it, you know, Fender, or whatever you want, we'll just put that name on it. Now, for us in America, at this point, that seems odd. That seems like, well, no, but you shouldn't be doing that. You know, if it says Gibson, it should be a Gibson. It should be made by Gibson. That's the way it's supposed to work. When we were in the Philippines, yeah, that's not how it worked. So, because, you know, if having the name Gibson on it would make it sell better, put the name Gibson on it. They really didn't see the point. And, you know, in the Philippines as well, we actually put, like, a wall around the Bible College. I think my parents did. Helped build a wall around the Bible College because we had a bunch of fruit trees and things that, you know, bore fruit and used it for the students and all those sorts of things. Well, I mean, everybody in the surrounding area, when the fruit trees were bearing fruit, they just come and take it because, you know, it's a shared resource. And so that's the environment that I grew up in. It is just, you know, well, if you want something, you just take it. Which, of course, is different. At least it used to be different in the States. Got really tickled several years ago because I read an article about a drug company in India who was producing this drug really cheap. And, I mean, you look at all their brochures and stuff, and, I mean, they're charts, purity and efficaciousness. I mean, everything just looks spectacular. And so they were selling a lot of it because they were cheap. And then somebody bothered to actually start testing the stuff. And it was nowhere near what the chart said it was in terms of concentrations or anything like that. Just nothing. And if I recall correctly, you know, they contacted it and contacted like the people in India and like, what's going on here? Why isn't this? And they just went, oh, well, you know, that's what we had to put in there to make it look good. Because, you know, it's just a chart. So on this clip from the Dark Horse podcast, Heather Haying was looking at a paper that had been published in JAMA recently. I believe this was published in JAMA, which is the Journal of the American Medical Association. Very prestigious. She was looking at this paper, and she had actually done some research into this paper. This paper was a meta-analysis that was looking at other studies that had been done to determine asymptomatic spread of COVID. And so she said, I think she said they used three references in this paper to try to determine what the percentage of asymptomatic spread was when people aren't showing any signs and yet can communicate the disease to others. So she said, actually, they have multiple references, but she was specifically talking about three of these references. And so one of these references looked at 303 patients and found that approximately 100% were just as infectious, even though they were asymptomatic. And she was like, okay, wow. You know, so it's, you know, they determined that it's 100%. And so, and then on reference 15, she said there's this paper that looked at 1,701 secondary characteristics and found an infection rate of asymptomatic compared to symptomatics of 40 to 140%. In other words, you had about less than half the chance of spreading it if you were asymptomatic, or nearly three times a chance of spreading it if you were Would that be right? 150%? 150%? Maybe it's 1.5%. Anyways. So, yeah, she looked at another paper, you know, had 40 to 70%. So she's going through all these papers, and then she said, and from these three numbers, these author concluded that, well, 75% seems about right. That you probably had a 75% rate of actually infecting someone else if you were asymptomatic. And she said the amazing thing is that if you look at like the first paper where they had 303 actual patients, she said this paper finds compellingly that viral load in asymptomatic patients were similar to that of symptomatic patients. She said, I think this is the one, though, where they actually said, we don't know what the real possibility of transmission, though, is because we didn't test for that. And then she went through the second paper and it was like, you know, there's some really questionable science in it. And then went through the next paper and there's some really questionable science, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what it comes down to is she concluded, as an evolutionary biologist, and her husband concluded, that really, this paper that's published in JAMA, it's based on shoddy science, period. And that any decent researcher should be able to look at it and say, yeah, that you can't reach those conclusions from those studies. But the author, whatever it is, did, and had it published in a major journal. So Brent Weinstein was talking about this, and, you know, they were talking about, so what's going on here? And he said, well, one of the things is he said, we are facing an epidemic of this style of science. But what you have to understand, and I'm not quoting directly, what you have to understand is that these jobs in science, in academia, are becoming rarer and rarer. And one of the things that people look at to determine whether or not you're qualified for a job is how many times you are cited by others. And they just look at the number. Oh, look, he got cited 50,000 times. He said, interestingly enough, it's not whether you're being cited to being criticized or whether you're being cited to being commended or whether you're being cited to be included in their work. It's just the fact that you've been cited. And so people love to scramble along and do these articles that they think are going to get them cited. And they just throw stuff in and just keep churning these things out so they can get more citations, because then that gets them better jobs. And when, and he said, so what I'm getting at here is I don't know why this is showing up in JAMA right now. That's shocking and dangerous, as you point out, because policy is almost certain to be founded on this. But what I suspect is privately, as we've seen in many other places in the K2 COVID story, was that there was a behind-the-scenes consensus about what wise policy is, and then the facts are rearranged around it to make it look like it's also in your interest as an individual. So the idea is that, well, if we have a large transmission rate for asymptomatic, these are scientists who are saying this. This isn't me. It's not some conspiracy theorist. They're saying, well, if we had a fact that would say, well, there's a large transmission rate for asymptomatic people, then that would encourage people to understand the draconian measures that we're taking to limit the spread of COVID-19. And so then we can point to the paper and we'll say, well, see, that paper says that, you know, asymptomatic people are 75% as infectious as normal people are. And that's why everybody has to stay home, stay locked down. So, you know, what Brent concluded with was, I'm saying is that you've got authors searching for what an audience demands. And this is, you know, as politics is the opposite of patriotism, giving the audience what it wants. And he said, this is as politics as the opposite of patriotism, giving the audience what it wants is the opposite of science. Science is supposed to tell you what is true, irrespectively of what you want to true. Want to hear. This isn't science. It's circular to the point that it looks like science. It's dressed up as science and it's presented in a sciencey place, and that's going to be enough to drive policy. Now, okay, so what is going on? What is going on? And I will tell you what I think is going on. What I experienced in the Philippines, what I saw in the Philippines, what I was not surprised to hear had happened with a drug company in India, was that all of that obviously is driven by flesh. And what was missing in the Philippines when I was there, some people directly attributed to the fact that the Catholic Church was there for hundreds of years. And the Catholic Church has an approach of Well, if you just mess up, you can go to the priest and say a few Hail Marys and then you're done. You know, penance. What they're called? Entitlements? No, you can buy... I just lost the name of it. Where you can buy ahead of time forgiveness of the thing that you want to do. Yeah. So we're going to buy ahead of time the thing that, you know, we want to do anyways. And then we're going to go ahead and do it. Which is not exactly the Protestant way. You know, you're trying to live a better life. And there are some people who will make the connection between the Reformation and the Renaissance, that they mutually fed each other, and that you really needed the Reformation. You really needed the 95 theses against the door. You really needed back to this idea of salvation by grace and not by works, and that, you know, you live a good life in Him and blah, 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 that it's not just this mill where you say, oh, I'm going to screw up, so after I screw up, then I'll just go over here and say a few little Hail Marys, I go. No, that there is a core, there's a moral core within you that constrains the behavior of your flesh. You know, when you have an India company that's just manufacturing charts, there's something wrong in the moral core. There's that restraint is not quite where it should be. And what we're seeing over and over and over again in every area of society is this disintegration of this moral core, this nobility, this discipline. You know, the atheists like Sam Harris like to say that, well, you know, we don't need religion to have a moral cord that can guide our actions. Well, maybe Sam Harris doesn't, but there are a whole lot of people out there that really need to feel someone looking over their shoulder, or you get into all this kind of weird stuff where people are just saying things because it's convenient for the moment. They're just saying it to get clicks, and it's not really the truth, and they really don't care whether it's the truth or not. It just improves their own character, their own reputation, or it helps them say, oh, well, this is what we have to do now for policy. Because it's not so much about it. What is true, it is what is expedient. But the problem is, if you don't have moral researchers who have a commitment to truth and not just their own reputation or their own salaries or how many clicks they get. If you don't have a dedication to truth, you don't have science. Because you get all kinds of papers like these that are just making these unfounded, wild claims that are published in peer-reviewed journals. And then everything just starts falling apart. It's a non-trivial issue. So yeah, you can boot the Ten Commandments out of the school. You can take them down off the wall and pitch them. You can boot school prayer out. And you can run on fumes for a while. You know, the fumes of the religious experience, that you still kind of have this idea that I should conform to some kind of a moral standard. In the Philippines, when I was there, I'm not saying it's that way anymore, there was this idea underneath the surface that it's not really wrong until you get caught. It's hard to do good science. It's hard to do good manufacturing. It's hard to do good work if that's your moral standard. It's not really wrong until you get caught. And then if you get caught, you can just go do penance and then you just walk away. You know, for a real functioning, innovative society, you really need people to agree on and act according to some good moral core. Honesty, integrity, kindness, loving your neighbor, all those things really are not optional if you're going to have a successful society. What we have decided in this society at a major level is we don't really need those things. Oh, we may still here and there give them lip service, but, you know, it's not that big of a deal if we put together a paper and, you know, some of the references aren't great, but, you know, we got something. I need my reputation. I need more clicks. Maybe we have a government policy. I mean, when the head of the COVID task force, the head, Dr. Fauci, comes out early on and tells people, oh, no, you don't need to wear masks. There's not really much reason to wear masks. And then later he says, well, you know, I didn't say that because it was really true. I just said that because we were worried about having a run on masks and not having enough for our healthcare providers. What? So you just lied to us. I mean, how is that going to work out? Didn't work out very well because you lose the integrity of it. I mean, I just heard a story about a hospital that had like an 80, in her 80s, grandmother. She's in her 80s in this hospital. She's on a ventilator. The doctors are telling the family, well, you know, she only has about a 20% chance to live. You know, we're really sorry, but she's really old and COVID is really hard on people. And the, you know, the family, thankfully, comes in and says, you know, we've been reading about this ivermectin and all the studies that have been done on it. It doesn't seem to have any side effects. We'd like you to give her ivermectin. And the doctor was like, no, we don't really want to do that. You know, but the family just kept pressing, give her ivermectin. So finally the family decides, well, or the doctors decide, okay, fine. She's in the ICU. She's on a ventilator. You know, what do we got to lose? So they start giving her ivermectin. She has an immediate turnaround. Like 48 hours later, she's off the ventilator. She can be moved to a regular room. She gets moved to a regular room. And then the hospital says, oh, no, we're not going to do that ivermectin stuff anymore because, you know, families should not be making the medical decisions. And the family had to take the hospital to court to get a judge to rule that the hospital should give this woman ivermectin. As soon as they took her off the ivermectin, she started going downhill. Thankfully, they got a judge to rule fast enough. Put her back on the ivermectin. You said, what is going on here? It was working. And then you've got people just saying, no, we're not going to do that. Because they care more about their reputation. They care more than they do about their patients. You know, how does that all make sense? It doesn't make sense until you realize that type of behavior is driven by flesh. And the difficulty with maintaining a society without some strong moral core is that the flesh spreads everywhere. Because you can't contain the flesh. Once you give vent to the flesh, once you allow the flesh in one area of your life, it just starts spreading everywhere. And it just shows up in the weirdest places. And as I'm saying, the flesh will do whatever it can to cause maximum destruction and maximum frustration. And it does that in each of us individually in whatever ways we will allow it to do it. So, you know, it's like really important really, really important to, and I've got a garage door opening and closing and lights are coming on, and I don't know if my wife is getting ready to bring the car in the garage. That's a whole other story. I'll tell you about that later. But anyway, so the upshot of it is we need a moral core. It's critically important that we have a moral core. Critically important. Because if we don't, weird stuff happens, and it happens in a lot of weird, weird places. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.